Yeah, so Rabbi Tendler, his treatment of Hilchas Milah is more specialty topics, and you know the topics that he enjoys talking about. But we're going to try and do a little bit more of a comprehensive treatment of the Shulchan Aruch here, Hilchas Milah. It's only a few simanim, and some few svarim that you should have, or should be aware of at least, but you should have in your library for now and for future limudim, is of course the Sefer HaBris, which was a classical sefer written by Rabbi Peretinsky, who was a Mayo, also very involved actually in the Manhattan Erev, I believe, but was out of print for many years, but now it is back in print. That's, you know, kind of an older sefer, which has a lot of the contemporary issues, though, of Hilchas Milah. But that has kind of already become a primary source. There are new secondary sources beyond the Sefer HaBris, and that is the four set of Svarim, called Oitzer HaBris by Yossel Adamayel. Is also a very important, comprehensive, and contemporary work on Hilchas Milah that everyone quotes from, is the Oitzer HaBris.
Like Yossel Adamayel?
Yeah, and then of course there's also the time for another time, and then also there is the Nishmas Avraham, which we've mentioned before, which has all the medical halacha shailas as well as the Encyclopedia Hilchatit Rifuit, are really svarim that you should invest in, and almost everything we're quoting will be coming from one of those. Svarim. So let's begin over here at Hilchas Milah. Begins with Siman Reish Samech, where the Shulchan Aruch tells us Mitzvah Saseh La'av Limo Es Benoi, the Mitzvah Saseh on the father to be Mal his son. Gedoyla Mitzvah Zu Mishar Mitzvah Saseh. This Mitzvah is greater than all of the other Mitzvah Saseh. Why is this Mitzvah greater than all of the other Mitzvah Saseh? So the Shach quotes in Sifkan Aleph that it's greater because it has kares. If you don't do it, there's a punishment. Most mitzvahs are safe. If you don't do them, you've just squandered an opportunity. But by milah, not only have you squandered an opportunity, but you incur a penalty of kares. Of course, that's the only mitzvahs are safe that's like that, along with carbon pesach. Those are the only two mitzvahs are safe. Because it is a gedoy mitzvah zu mishar mitzvahs are safe, the Minchas Chinuch writes in Afkamino Lamaisa, not only the fact that you incur the kares penalty, but the mitzvah Minchas Chinuch and mitzvah Hei suggested perhaps the rule of Hamavazes Ayavazes Yosem Michaimish would not apply to mitzvah Milah. The Shulchan Aruch has it once in Hilchot Lulav and then again in Yoredei and Hilchot Yahargval Yavar and Simikuf Nunches, that by mitzvah Asei, in order to perform a mitzvah Asei, a person has to give up until Chaimish Nechasav, 20% of that which he has. In order not to violate Alois Asei, you have to give up Kohen Beso, all of the money that you have. So perhaps that rule of giving up more than a fifth, that you don't have to give up more than a fifth of your money in order to perform any given mitzvah saseh, perhaps that only applies to a mitzvah saseh that doesn't carry with it the penalty of kares. But if it has a penalty of kares, it's gedolah from the shaar mitzvah saseh, perhaps one even has to spend more than a chaimish. And this could be relevant, lamaisa, I suppose, if you're in a, flying in a mile to some remote location. Perhaps it could be an expensive endeavor, and you wouldn't have the ability to say, perhaps, well, it costs so much money, it's more than a fifth of what I have, I don't have to do it. Perhaps milah overrides that principle, because it's gedolah mitzvah zu mishar mitzvah saseh. Then the Shulchan Aruch continues on, it's in Mereish Tam Asif Aleph, same sif, but the Shulchan Aruch says, it's important to be sensitive to it, mitzvah saseh la'av limo es benoi. It's a mitzvah saseh on the father to be mal his son. And in fact, the Sefer Mitzvahs HaKotan, the Smak, counts two mitzvahs. One mitzvah upon the father to be mal his son, and then a separate independent mitzvah if the son did not receive a milah when he was a katan, that he has a mitzvah later on to do it to himself when he becomes a gadol. But those he counts as two separate independent mitzvahs, one for the father to be mal the son, one for the son to be mal himself. The Rambam and the Sefer Mitzvahs and the Sefer HaChinuch only count one mitzvah. Just when the child is young, it's a mitzvah on the father. When the child becomes older, the mitzvah transfers to the son, the same mitzvah. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we don't hear echoes of the smak, that there do seem to be unique things that apply to the father above and beyond the chiyuv on everybody else to see to it that the son receives a milah. See, the reason why Rav HaRishonim counted as one mitzvah is because they really understand that fundamentally it's the son's obligation to do milah to himself. Just when he's a katan, he can't do so. So it's a mitzvah on behalf of everybody else to help him out and do the milah for him. So the mitzvah on the father is really kind of just as a custodian to make sure to help the son do his mitzvah. And if the father doesn't do it, the Shulchan Aruch tells you there's a mitzvah on Beis Din. Im lo mal ha'av es b'no chayav im Beis Din limuloi. That's in Reish Tamach Alef Sefalach. But even though the chiyuv on the father when the child is young is only chiv to help the son fulfill his mitzvah, and that mitzvah could apply to Beis Din as well, we do find a greater responsibility on the father to be ma'al his son, or perhaps the father has some unique status, not just helping out the son perform his mitzvah, perhaps the father has a unique status over here, above and beyond the rest of, you know, Beis Din. He has some unique role over here to play in doing mila on his son. Where do you see the father's unique role? Meaning he's not just helping the son fulfill his mitzvah like Beis Din could help the son fulfill his mitzvah mila when he's a katan before he becomes a gadol, and then the mitzvah transfers to himself. You do find the echoes of the opinion of the Smak that perhaps there is some unique status to the father, not that he has his own mitzvah, but he has a unique responsibility here in three places in Shulchan Aruch, if you're sensitive to it. You pick them up. So one place where you find that the father has a unique role, it's not just he's helping the son fulfill his mitzvah, but he has a role to play here, is in Simen Reish Samech Hei Sif Beis, where the Shulchan Aruch describes what is the Nusach HaBracha that you make when you perform Mila. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes the opinion of the Rambam, if it's the father who's doing Mila, then the Bracha is Limo Ashabein. If it's not the father who's doing the Mila, then it's Al HaMila. So typically that represents, the Rambam makes this distinction, when a person performs a mitzvah that's incumbent upon himself, he makes the bracha with the prefix le, but when he's performing, like likvaya mezuzah in your own home, but if he's performing a mitzvah on behalf of someone else, then it's al. Like if I'm kveya mezuzah in your home, it's al kvias mezuzah, not likvaya mezuzah. So from the fact that the Rambam makes that same distinction here by mila with regards to the father, that implies that the father has a unique role over here. That when he's performing the mila, it's kind of like it's his mitzvah. We don't count that as two mitzvahs in the minyan mitzvahs, one mitzvah on the father, one mitzvah on the son. But it sounds like when the son is younger, the father does, it becomes kind of like his mitzvah to a certain degree. And therefore you make limo ashabein and not al hamila. The Rambam disagrees, and the Rambam says we always make al hamila, whether it's the father or not. But the Rambam, at least in the Shulchan Aruch, do make this distinction. Another place where you see the kind of unique responsibility or role that the father plays is in Semen Reish Samech Hesif Aleph, not with regards to the mitzvah, the bracha of Al HaMila, with regards to the bracha of Achnisa Bervisa Shavram Avinu. The Ramah there quotes the opinion of the Rambam that if the father is there, then you make Achnisa Bervisa Shavram Avinu, and if there's no father there, someone else makes the bracha of Lachnisa Bevisa Shavram Avinu. However, the Gra in Sivka in Beis says, "V'har bechokim alze, v'ayin beis Yosef." Says many disagree with this, and they hold there's no father there. There's no bracha of Lachnisa Bevisa Shavram Avinu, which again implies that some role of the father plays that is irreplaceable. If the father is there, you make Lachnisa. If there's no father, you don't make Lachnisa. Again, we don't paskin like that. It's funny that all these distinctions, we don't paskin like them. But it does appear here that opinion is represented that perhaps if there's no father, you don't make Lachnisa Bevisa Shavram Avinu. Another place where you see, or if you're sensitive to it, you'll notice that the father might have a unique role is with regards to the Brach of Shechianu. In Simen Reish Samech Hei Siv Zayin, the Shulchan Aruch paskins that you make a Brach of Shechianu on the Mila if the father's there. If there's no father there, there's no Shechianu that's made on the Mila. The Rambam disagrees, and the Rambam's opinion is the father always makes Shechianu even if he's not there. Even if the father's not there, he always makes Shechianu, wherever he is. If he's incarcerated and he hears that they made a meal on his son, he would make a Shechianu over there in the jail. Wherever you are, you would make a Shechianu. So it implies that no matter where the father is, he gets the Shechianu. It has nothing to do with being present at the meal. Again, which implies this is kind of his responsibility incumbent upon him, not even if he's not the one who's doing it. The Shulchan Aruch paskins, if the father's there, he makes the Shechianu. If there's no father there, there's no Shechianu. Also implies that the father has some unique role over here. And the Sfaradim actually do make a Shechianu by a bris. In Eretz Yisrael, the minig is to make a Shechianu by a bris. The Ramah disagrees, and the Ramah says it's only if there is a father and it's a Bechor. It's only if the father is there. Not only is he there, he's the one who's performing the Mila, and it's a Bechor. He already, you know, limits the application of when you make a Shechianu. And the Shach goes on to say, you know, obliterates the whole thing. We have the minig not to make Shechianu at all. The Gra says, why do we have a minig not to make Shechianu? It's a mitzvah habam, izman lezman. Why don't we make a Shechianu? So he quotes from the Rashba that he never found a good reason why we don't make a Shechianu. Some said it's because of the Gemara and Ksubis. We learned this year that's because there's tzara d'yanuka. That's why we don't make the shasimcha b'moinoi at the benching for bris milah, because the child is in pain. How can we now express our elation that we performed the mitzvah bris milah while the child is in pain? So that was the opinion of the Rav Yoh, why you don't say shachianu to bris. So the Rajba rejects that. The Gra quotes all this. And the Rajba says, 1 minute, if a person gets a Yerusha when a father dies, he gets an inheritance, new home, new car, he makes a Shechianu. If he owns it with somebody else, he makes a Toiv HaMeitiv. But you make a bracha. So, yes, but he's sitting Avelos. I mean, I don't know if you make it during Avelos, but it's certainly a painful moment in time. And yet, you make a Shechianu. So you see, even though one is in pain, that doesn't necessarily preclude one from making a Shechianu. So just because the child is in pain, shouldn't preclude us from making a Shechianu. So the Gra says he hasn't found a good reason. He really quotes from the Rashba. He hasn't found a good reason as to why make a Shechianu. So the Talmidei HaGra Eretz Yisrael was primarily settled by one of the Aliyahs was settled by the Talmidei HaGra. So in Eretz Yisrael, they've adopted the practice of the Gra of making a Shechianu at the time of a bris milah. Here in Chutz Laaretz, though, the minig is like it says in the Ramah and in the Shach, that we don't have the minig of making Shechianu at all. Yes.
When does he make an
after? I presume. I've never seen it, to be honest.
Have you ever been to a bris milah?
No. Never been in a bris milah. I've never been by a Sfaradish bris. I'm told the Sfaradim make it here, too. That's what it says in the Shulchan Aruch. Another place where you see a unique role of the father is all the way back where we started in Siman Reish Samech. There's a Gilyan Marsha, where the Gilyan Marsha comments on the first words of the Shulchan Aruch. Mitzvah Sasei La'av Limo Es Benoi. So he says that he's supposed to do it himself. He's not supposed to give it to somebody else, and perhaps shlichus doesn't work. If he knows how to do milah, he's not allowed to give it to somebody else. Even though shlichus shel adam kemoisai, it doesn't work. That's the Pisrei Tshuva and Siman Reish Samech Dalet of Katan Aleph quotes from the Shach. Here shlichus doesn't work. Why doesn't shlichus work? So they tie it in to a famous comment of the Ksais HaChayshen that shlichus doesn't work by if it's a mitzvah shebegufoi. I cannot ask someone, appoint a shliach, to put on tefillin for me. Why not? Because tefillin is a mitzvah that I have to do with my own body. There are certain mitzvahs that are mitzvahs haguf. A davening. I can't appoint a shliach. That's a bad example. But tefillin, eating matzah, sitting in sukkah, I can't appoint a shliach to do it for me. You have to do it yourself. So to Mila, it sounds like, from the Gilyan Marasha and from the Shach, sounds like that the Mila is included in that list. If you know how to do Mila on your son, you have to do it yourself. Wow, so I'm not really just helping the son fulfill his obligation, even though there's only one mitzvah in the Minyan HaMitzvahs on the son. And what the father's obligation is to see to it that his son performs milah, I'm not just a custodian. The father has kind of a mitzvah shebeguf that he's not allowed to give it over to somebody else. And there were some tzaddikim who had the minig of doing milah themselves on their own sons. I mean, Rabbi Tendler mentioned, I think he did it on his sons, but he's a doctor. But I think that they say that Reb Chaim, I think Reb Shechter quotes it in one of his svarim, that Reb Chaim did milah on Reb Moshe Salvechik, who was the Rav's father, who was the Bechor. And then after that, he wanted to do this because the mitzvah Sheba Gufay. And then after that, Reb Simcha Zelig, who was the dying in Brisk, I guess observed the Brisk, told Reb Chaim, when is enough? Reb Brisker Rav, somebody else, a professional model. But there are those who are mahader to do the mitzvah themselves, especially if the person is a physician and knows how to do these kind of things, especially if he's trained. To do the mitzvah yourself on your own son, there is such an inyan. The Darkei Moshe disagrees, and Darkei Moshe, the Ramah, disagrees, and he holds that you can appoint the shlichus for milah. It's funny, we reject this concept too, this unique role of the father, it's a mitzvah shebeguf. And in fact, it says in the Shulchan Aruch, Simon, where is this? Simon Reish Samachay Sif Tes, Avi Aben Oimer Al HaMoyel Gohediyah Shehu Shluchay. The Avi Aben is supposed to stand over the Moyel at the time of the milah and appoint him as a shliach. Most Moyelim who are conscientious enough, and they tell the father, appoint me as your shaliach. It's part of their routine. But you should be aware of this as well, that it's an obligation on the father to see to it, to appoint the moel as his shaliach to perform the meal on his behalf. But also you see that he has a unique role here. It's not just anybody who could come along and do meal. The father has some status which he's now transferring to the moel. It's not maybe a mitzvah shebeguf, but it is something that he is transferring to the moel. The whole discussion, so those are the four places you see echoes of this idea that the father has a unique status, not his own mitzvah, but perhaps a unique status. The whole notion, though, the assumption of the discussion of the Gilyan Marsha, that this is a mitzvah shebeguf on the father to do milah on his own son, makes a big assumption. And that is that the mitzvah of milah, I mean, maybe it's the basic assumption, the mitzvah of milah is to remove the arha arla. That's the mitzvah, is the mice of removing the arha arla. However, that is not as simple as it might seem. The Gemara tells us in Masechtas Menachos and Daf Mem Gimel that once David HaMelech was sitting in the mikvah and he became despondent, chol shadaitai, because it was the first time in his life that he was arum min ha-mitzvahs. He wasn't surrounded by any mitzvah, he had no tzitzis, no tefillin, he's sitting in a mikvah. And then he remembered, oh, he has the mitzvah mila with him all the time. And it's Yashva Daita. So what do you mean? Esther Marachor Zaruah. Shuvas Marachor Zaruah. He asked, what do you mean he had the mitzvah mila with him all the time? The mitzvah mila happened on the eighth day. There's pictures of it, maybe a video. But that's all in the past. That's not now with him. He's not carrying around the mila with him. That happened a long time ago when he was 8 days old. So Marachor Zaruah says the implication of this Gemara is the mitzvah milah is not so much the action of removing the arha arla, it's a status. Some mitzvahs require a person to be a certain thing. The mitzvah of the milah is to have a status of no arla, of gemalt, as we'd say in Yiddish, of being nimo. That is the nature of the mitzvah milah. And it's a status, not so much as an action, but creating a certain status. And this issue, whether the mitzvah milah is removing the arha arla, which is the assumption of the Gilyan Marsha, perhaps that's a mitzvah haguf from the father to remove the arha arla, or it is a status-oriented mitzvah of being gemalt, is at the heart of a few issues that come up l'maisa. It is all, the first issue where this comes up is, can a person be asleep for the mitzvah milah? It was generally assumed, I think Rabbi Tendler mentioned in the past, I don't remember it from this year, it was generally assumed in the past that children didn't experience pain at the time of milah. Even in the hospitals, they didn't used to use an anesthetic. And then they did, I don't remember when it was, Rabbi Tendler quoted all the history of it, they did a test that there's a certain hormone, they discovered there's a certain hormone that gets emitted by the body, the natural response to pain. And they tested little babies, do they also emit this hormone, which would indicate, you can't ask the child, are you in pain? And children cry all the time, it's hard to know. They checked the hormone levels when they were experiencing pain. Do they emit this hormone? And they do. So they interpreted from that that the child does experience pain. So we know there is pain associated with the milah. Is there a mitzvah to alleviate that pain? So Rav Tendler mentioned the Medrash from Parshas Lech Lecha, where it says that Avraham Avinu did milah specifically k'chayim hayoyim, did mitzvah at the heat of the day, in order l'hachbil scharoi, in order to increase his own tzar, because l'fum tzar ha'agra, the more tzar that you experience, all the better. So the Imre Yosher, which Rabbi Tendler found incomprehensible, the Imre Yosher, Meir Arik, the Shevet Alevi, both write, well, you see that Avraham Avinu increased the pain that was necessary, you know, that was involved in his milah, so too, at least we should not alleviate the pain. And pain is part of milah, and that's kind of l'fum tzar ha'agra. So B'Omer in the Sfidei Yesh, Rabbi Tendler also disagreed, felt that no, if there's pain there, we should try and alleviate the pain. The fact that Avraham Avinu, orchestrated the fact that he had extra pain because of Fum Tzara Agra is a medrash and hard for us to understand in the first place. Certainly not something that we should emulate. That you don't have to do that. One is allowed to alleviate pain. In fact, it says in the Nishmas Avram that he checked, which is Dr. Abraham Sefer, that he surveyed all the Mekubalim. Was there an Indian at least Alpi Kabbalah to have, you know, not to alleviate pain at the time of milah? And none of them, he said, felt that there was an Indian against, you know, a problem with alleviating pain. That said, Dr. Abraham notes that the minig was not to use an anesthetic. Even a topical anesthetic, the minig was not to use it. He quotes from Rabbi Yashim and Shlomo Zalman that if it's a chayla, she'en bo sakana, blah, 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 whatever situations where the parents want it, a unique situation, they didn't have a problem with it, but that was certainly not the minig to use it. Why? So Dr. Steinberg writes in the Encyclopedia Hilchatit Rifuit, he says the reason why the minig is because we don't want to introduce foreign substances. Milah will never like you tampering with their procedure, and no, there's always resistance to new protocols. That's for sure. That's our initial stance. But even if that, barring that, they don't like introducing other substances to the makom hamilah. It makes things slippery, or you're just changing the arena over there. They don't like introducing that. But Rabbi Tendler, as he mentioned, compounds his own. He has a pharmacist, I guess, who compounds his own anesthetic, which he mixes with lidocaine. He gave us the whole formula over there. That in order to alleviate some tzar at the time of the milah, and in fact that is used by his milah. I've never.
Who are his milah?
He has talmidim. He had a school about for training Moilim. He didn't mention it this time. But he had at one time had a school for training Moilim. So so his Talmidim do use it, or those who he advises, but it's not only is it not done, it's not even discussed as an issue, so it's kind of not there. The Paiskim though do bring up, this is a greater issue, what about anesthesia or an anesthetic that's a general anesthesia for an adult? See, and a child is really not one who's going to protest. If you don't use an anesthetic, okay, the child isn't protesting. Problem is, if you have a Baal Tshuva and he's an adult, what are you going to tell him? No anesthetic, lahachpil tzara, fum tzara agra. Now it's a major procedure, you're doing it on an adult. Or let's say it's gerus, you know, to do mila, a child person's coming for gerus. What are you going to tell them? You give them a little lidocaine? You know, I don't know if that really, yeah. Solves the problem. So what about a general anesthesia? Can you do general anesthesia at the time of Mila? So Srida Yesh writes, you cannot use a general anesthetic. Rabbi Tamler alluded to that. That's why he said he was surprised that the Srida Yesh said this. He said he met with the Srida Yesh and tried to convince him out of it, but he wasn't budging. So Srida Yesh was of the opinion he cannot use a general anesthesia because mitzvah shikras kavana. How can you have kavana if you're sleeping? Or Geirus, we'll get to it when we do Geirus, that how can you be nichnas to Kedushas Yisrael at the time that you're sleeping? Which we'll get to, that's a bigger statement by Geirus, because that implies much more. But if the mitzvah of Mila is removing the Ahar Arla, it makes sense. Okay, so you have to be awake at the time they're removing the Ahar Arla, because that is the nature of the mitzvah of Mila, is removing the Ahar Arla. The Maharsham also has a tshuva like that. Even though the Maharsham is known as a Mekel, I think it's Machmer over here that you cannot use a general anesthesia. However, if it's Lepanovich or Nezecher Yitzchak, disagrees, and his opinion was that he quotes from the Marachor Zaruah, a similar argument, that the nature of the mitzvah is not to remove the Ahar Arla, it's a status of being Gemal, of having no Arla, of being Nimol. So it's not so much at the time, the moment that you remove the Ahar Arla. So the guy will wake up and then he'll realize that he was in fulfillment of a mitzvah Mila. But it's nothing, it's not like it's a critical moment in time when you remove the Ahar Arla that you have to be awake for and have Kavana for. So these two perspectives on Mila might be relevant to what your perspective is or what how you feel about doing a general anesthesia at the time of Mila.
What did Rabbi Tamler
ask him? He was Mabel, I think. He didn't understand the Sweet Yeshiva. This also might be, perhaps, the issue that's being debated by the Rambam and by the Ravid. The Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch over here, Simon Reish Samach Aleph, Sif Aleph, quotes from the Rambam, Imlo mal ha'aves b'no, if a child, when he grows up, k'sheyigdol limo asasma, when the child grows up, he has to do mila on himself, imlo mal chayv kares. If a person doesn't do mila, as we mentioned, he incurs the penalty of kares. When does that penalty incur? So writes the Rama, in the name of the Rambam, I believe, right? Hold on. Yes. Uvechol yom. No, this is the Ravid. This is the Ravid. Yes, this is the Ravid. Uvechol yom ayvim ba'ein shenelu. Every day you incur kares. I don't know how every day you could be dead. Dead again. So, but every day you incur kares. It accrues every day. One chi of kares. Two chi of kares. Three chi of kares. And the Gron Sifkat in Beis notes that the opinion of the Rambam is not so. You incur the kares penalty when you die. You're dead already. Now you incur the kares penalty. But you have to have gone your whole life, not perform mila, now you get kares. The Ravid holds every day you don't do the mila, accrues another chi of kares. So explains Rabbi Yosef Engel in his Tshuvas to Ben Piras that that's the issue that's being debated here. According to the Rambam, the nature of the mitzvah of mila is, or perhaps is, to remove the Ahar Arla. So that's a mitzvah to do it once in your life, remove the Ahar Arla. And every day you have the opportunity to do tshuva for the previous day and do it now. Better late than never. And you don't get kares unless you die and you haven't done it. But according to the Ravid, the mitzvah of Mila is to be gemal. It's a status. So every single day that you don't have that, you haven't acquired that status, you incur another chi of kares. This issue might also be relevant. What is the nature of the mitzvah meal? And the fact that if every single day you push it off, you're not in fulfillment of a new mitzvah, every day that you don't have the status, you incur something else, or you continue to be in violation of it. Not to say I haven't done what I'm supposed to do, like a homework assignment that I haven't done, and every single day I just push it off. It's not a good idea, but I still only have one homework assignment. No, every day that you're not gemalt, you lose a mitzvah, is relevant as well to pushing off the mitzvah of Mila. The Shulchan Aruch, the Taz, I'm sorry, in Reish Samech Beis, where is this? Sifkatan Gimel discusses a child who was not well, gets better, and now it's a Mila Shelo Bezmana. And let's say the first day that you have the opportunity to do the Mila, or you're permitted to do the Mila, is a Thursday. Can you do a Mila Shelo Bezmana on a Thursday? What's the problem with doing a Mila Shelo Bezmana on a Thursday? So Rashi writes at the beginning of Parshas Vayera that the third day after the Bris is the most difficult day. So you might have to be Mechal al Shabbos for Pikuach Nefesh. It's the most difficult. He's in Pikuach Nefesh. Maybe you'll have to be Mechal al Shabbos. So if you do the Mila on Thursday, and the most difficult day is the day three, so Thursday is day one, Friday is day two, day three is Shabbos, you might have to be Mechal al Shabbos. So the Taz says you cannot do a Mila Shaloi Bizmana on Thursday. The Shach asks, well, if Thursday is difficult, Friday should also be off limits. 3 days is difficult. The Taz assumes it's just the third day. Something happens on the third day. Others assume Thursday and Friday are all off limits. Thursday is Friday too. The Shach disagrees with all of this. And the Shach says that when you're doing a mitzvah, we don't worry about the consequences that might happen later. You might lead you to Chil Shabbos later on. The Raya is from the Gemara Masechta Shabbos that we mentioned last section. Gemara says in Masechta Shabbos, you're not allowed to take a boat trip 3 days before Shabbos. And the Baal Amor explains, because boat travel was dangerous, and you might put yourself in a situation that you have to be Mechal Shabbos come Shabbos. And therefore, we mentioned this in the context of elective surgery on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. You shouldn't put yourself in a situation, you might have to be Mechal Shabbos sometimes. Just like the boat trip. However, the Gemara says, if it's B'mokka Mitzvah, you're going for a mitzvah purpose, you're allowed to leave on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, even though you might have to be Mechal Shabbos, come Shabbos. So says the Shach, so what? You're putting yourself in a situation, even if it's Thursday, the most difficult day will be Shabbos, and you might have to be Mechal Shabbos for this Sakanas Nefashos. So you're allowed to do it if it's B'mokka Mitzvah. Like here, the mitzvah of Mila. Most passing like the Shach, that they'll do a Mila Shelo Bezmana on Thursday or Friday. But there are some Ma'ilim who passing like the Taz. I think Rabbi Katzenstein won't do a Mila Shelo Bezmana on Thursday or Friday. Someone just told me, maybe just Friday. The opposite from the Taz. It's not the third day, it's the second day now after the Mila is the most difficult. But either way, whether it's a different variation on the Taz, they passing like the Taz. I thought the Minig Ha'olam was like the Shach, that the Mila Shelo Bezmana.
I thought all Mila Shelo Bezmana is on Sunday.
Yeah. So the Pisrei Tshuva and Simei Reish Samech Beis, Simei Beis says, they quote to the name of the Nadi Yehuda, that there was a Minig in the certain Minig that he's upset about. The people would push every Mila Shelo Bezmana off to Erev Pesach in order to get out of a Siyum. And he's upset about that. He says, first of all, it's not Zrizus, that's for sure. And he makes the argument that every single day you're losing a mitzvah Mila. Every single day you don't do Mila, it's not so much you're pushing off Mila, it's lack of Zrizus. There's an argument to be made that every single day you lose is lost. Because the mitzvah Mila is not to do something, an action, that if you push it off, you can do it later, it's to have a status of being gemalt. In which case, every day that you don't do it, you're negating that status. Perhaps you're losing a mitzvah every single day. There is a widespread misconception or perception that every Mila Shelo Bezmana happens on Sunday, which is terrible. It's not supposed to be the case. It's not supposed to be the case. People do it. They orchestrate it like that, but it's a terrible thing. I used to speak about this. I said it last year. I used to speak about it every year. That's terrible. It's terrible. And then I made a Mila Shelo Bezmana. Both my sons were Mila Shelo Bezmana. They were both born early, premature. They weren't ready to have a Mila on the time, the proper day.
Both on Sunday?
One was not. One was actually closed Mincha time, like a Tuesday at like 6 o'clock, which was much more expensive because 6 o'clock you can't serve eggs and bagels. We had to make a whole bar mitzvah over there. But my other son, it just happened to be Sunday. I was upset about that. But either way, what can you do? I was ready to do a Monday, just so it shouldn't be Sunday. But. The Gilin Marsha is another case which he brings up right here at the beginning of Simin Reish Samach. There's so much right here on this first page. About whether you have two children to do Mila on, one that's a Mila Bezmana, one that's a Mila Shaloi Bezmana. So he says, which do you do first? So he says, you do the Mila Bezmana first, because the mitzvah Chaviva B'Shaita. This is the day, this is his day. Let him do the Mila. The other guy is a Tzika, he just came now, he's a latecomer, he's a Tzika commoner, just came now, you come second. Mila Shaloi Bezmana. The Mila Bezmana, he should come first, it's his day. Then the Dvar Avram, though, has a Tshuva, the Kovner Rav, where he disagrees with the Gilin Marsha. It's just the opposite. We should do the Mila of the Shaloi Bezmana first. The Bila Bezmana has the whole day. You have the whole day to do the mila. The mila shavayi bezmana every single second. It's not only every single day. Once you have all of day eight. Once you pass day eight, now every single second, not only every single day do you accrue a chi of kares, every single day, second that you're not in fulfillment of the mitzvah mila, you're negating a mitzvah. You're being mavatal a mitzvah. So he says you should, the seconds count over here. Minutes count. So you should do the mitzvah mila right away. I don't know if we have to take it that far. The Ravid said it's every day you incur a chi of kares. He didn't say every second you incur a chi of kares. So I don't know if the dvar, we have to take it that you know that far, that we have to worry about seconds, but you should not push off. A mila shaloi bizmana. It's not something you just push off. And perhaps it's even more chomer than a mila bizmana. Mila shaloi, the dvar Avram makes the argument you should do it before the mila bizmana. The Shulchan Aruch and Siman Reish Samach Beis, Sif Beis, discusses the case, which is where we just were, about doing a mila shaloi bizmana on a Thursday. Why would you do a mila shaloi bizmana? Because we're talking about a child that isn't well. So the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Reish Samach Beis, Sif Beis, distinguishes between two different types of reasons why you push off a mila. I mean, both is the cases the child isn't sick, but there's two different protocols. If the child is sick, not with a chayli shebechol aguf, so the minute that the child becomes better, you can do the mila. You don't have to wait. Right? When he comes better, you can do the mila. If it's a chayli shebechol aguf, you have to wait 7 days, miyeis liyeis, 7 24-hour periods before you do the bris. That's why my son, we did the bris late in the afternoon. He didn't get clearance to do the mila till like 5 o'clock, and then, so 24-hour periods was late in the afternoon. So that's why sometimes you have a mila shaloi bizmano late in the afternoon. It's not because people want to do it when it's most convenient. Once it's not tied to chakras anymore, let's do it at 4 in the afternoon. No, it's because that's the first time that you have the opportunity to do the mila. It's 7 24-hour periods after the child got clearance from the doctor. What's called a chayli shebechol aguf? What's called not a chayli shebechol aguf? So the Ma'arik says that if it's, I think it's quoted by the Shach, Ma'arik says that if it's a suffix sakana, that's a chayli shebechol aguf. If it's not a suffix sakana, he's not in sakana tefashos, which we know what that is from the previous section by Hilchos Shabbos. If he's not a suffix sakana, then it's not a chayli shebechol aguf, and you can do the mila right when he gets better. The Shach says if he's just bitzar be'echem e'evarav, he's in pain. It doesn't mean it has to be some significant, pain. It can't just be, a child has a little diaper rash, so you push off a mila. You don't push off a mila for a diaper rash, unless it's infected or something. But if it's a chayli shebechol aguf, he's in tzar though. He did not everything's not perfect. So then you push off the mila until the situation resolves itself. With this idea of waiting by a chayli shebechol aguf 7 days miyeis liyeis is a din midoy raisa. Let's say you did it early. That's a din midoy raisa, or that's a din midoy rabbana, and they're waiting 7 days miyeis liyeis. So the Binyan Tzion has a tshuva where he claims it's a din midoy raisa. Alach al moish miyisina, you have to wait 7 days miyeis liyeis. And he's not sure if you did it early, maybe you'd require hatofes dam bris, like doing a mila before the eighth day. I think Rabbi Tamer felt that was correct. However, Rav HaPoiskim, Dr. Abraham Noz or Shlomo Zalman, Rav HaPoiskim's opinion is that, Shekel's opinion, others, is that it's only a din midrabbanim. As a harchoka, the child was so sick, let's wait a period of time. But it's not that it's a din midrabbanim, right? It's to wait 7 days. Certainly, if you did it within that period, it wouldn't require hatofes dam bris. What's called a chayli shebechol aguf was not called a chayli shebechol aguf, was called suffix sakana, was not called suffix sakana. We know, basically. However, there are some unique mila issues that come up that are discussed by the Paiskim. One issue that always comes up is the weight of the child. I think Rabbi Tana mentioned, have a messiah about what weight they'll do a mila. Some 5 pounds, some 4 pounds, some when the child is gaining weight at a specific rate, then they'll already do the mitzvah, then they'll do mila. If the child is not gaining weight at the speed that they deem healthy, so then they won't do the mila. Where Moshe writes, that's not a chayli shebechol aguf. Whenever the child gains the proper amount of weight, you can do it right away. You don't have to wait a certain amount of time after that point. But let's say the child can't eat on his own. He might be a big kid, but he doesn't know how to suck. Some children, early babies, are not developed enough. But, well, then that's a chayli shebechol aguf. The child has to be eating for 7 days on his own before you can do the mila. That's a chayli shebechol aguf. Well, let's say they put a child in an incubator. So Dr. Abraham writes, that's a chayli shebechol aguf. However, sometimes they put a child in an incubator just because they hang lights. If a child is jaundiced a little bit, they'll hang blue lights from the incubator. You can't do that over a regular bassinet. There's no roof. So they put a kid in an incubator. Why do they put a child in an incubator? Incubator is controlled temperature. It's a higher temperature. Because a kid who can't control his own body temperature, that's a certain brain function, is to control your body temperature. If he's not developed enough, he can't control his own body temperature. So they put a kid in an incubator. So that's a chayli shebechol aguf. But if let's say they're just using the roof of the incubator to hold the blue lights, well then that's not a chaydish of a chalal roof. So sometimes parents will walk into the hospital, they see the kid with the blue light in the middle of the incubator, and they start freaking out. That's not a chaydish of a chalal roof. You have to ask, why is the child in the incubator? Or it's an interesting distinction Dr. Abraham quotes, if the child is a fever, so if it's a significant fever, it's a chaydish of a chalal roof. Not a significant fever, not a chaydish of a chalal roof. So they distinguish, and I don't know where they get this from, someone told me it's the policy in all hospitals, that this temperature, I don't know what they do differently at this temperature, but this is temperature is kind of a line in the sand in the hospitals of 100.4. In Celsius, it makes more sense. It's 38 degrees Celsius, but so it's more of a round number. But if a kid is 38 degrees Celsius, that's already, it's a chayli shebechol aguf al pi halacha. In the hospitals, it's also a significant temperature for certain things. They have to wait 7 days.
It's 1 degree Celsius over the regular body temperature.
No, 98.6.
37.
Oh, 37.
Celsius, 38
Celsius. I don't know if that's the reason why. Interesting shot. Dr. Abraham also says if a kid is on antibiotics, that is a chayli shebechol aguf. I didn't see anyone else point this out, but I noticed myself that Dr. Abraham quotes it from Shlomo Zalman that how long do you have to wait? So antibiotics is a chayli shebechol aguf, but you have to wait till the regimen of antibiotics is over until the kid is no longer symptomatic. So Shlomo Zalman understood, you know, if anyone ever here took antibiotics, you know that you don't really need to take the whole 10-day regimen that they give you, but the doctors recommend you take a 10-day regimen. So when do you start counting? You start feeling better already, you know, like by day 3. So when do you start counting the 7 days? From day 3 or from day 10 when the regimen is over? So Shlomo Zalman said when the child is no longer symptomatic. Rav Shekhla told me he thinks it's from when the child, when the regimen is over, which could be a week difference. I think this might also be relevant to, let's say they give the child, this happens very common, they give the child antibiotics as a preventative measure. The child wasn't sick with anything, but any child that's born with a certain, you know, under certain conditions, let's say the mother's sick, sometimes throw antibiotics at the kid. You know, if the kid is, you know, unusually susceptible. So again, let's say there's a regimen of antibiotics without symptoms. So Dr. Steinberg isn't sure what the halacha is there, if they give you antibiotics preventatively. So it might be relevant to this issue as well. Does it have to do with the symptoms? Does it have to do with the regimen of antibiotics? Shulchan Aruch says over here, what about a child that's the wrong color? A child is yoroik. What does yoroik mean? Not green. The Gemara says in Mesechta's Megillah, Esther yorakrak haisa. Esther was green. Esther was not green, Rabbi Yisai. She was not one of the Muppets. What does it mean she was green? So the Gra writes that green doesn't mean, yarok doesn't mean green, yarok means gold. She was tan. Because the quotes a contradiction between the Talmud Bavli and the Talmud Yusha, and I think the Zohar HaKadosh. The Talmud Bavli, the Mishnah says, Masechta Sukkah, Esrog HaYarok, Kikarsi is puzzle. A green Esrog is puzzle. Like leeks. But then the Zohar says, Yarok is Mahudar. That's why many people in Mekubalim are makbid to take Dafka, a green Esrog. It's Mahudar. Litvish people think that it's puzzle. The Kubalim and Sfaradim think that it's the best. So the Gemara says, well, what is it? Is it how, you can't have a contradiction between the Bavli and the Nigla and the Nistar. So the Gemara distinguishes, it says, Yaroik Kikarsi is green. Yaroik is gold, or like a Zav, or like a yellowish tinge. That's the perfect Esrik. That's what the Gemara, that's what the Zayah means. A yellow Esrik is the best. Your kikarsi is puzzle, that's green. When the Gemara says Esther Yerakra Kaisa, it doesn't say Yerakra kikarsi. She was gold or tan. So do we here when the Shulchan Aruch says that the Tino Kayorok, you don't do Mila, is referring to a yellow baby. Why is a child yellow? So that's be Rabbi Tendler explained that that's because the liver isn't functioning yet properly, so it's not breaking down the bilirubin, and when you have the buildup of bilirubin, which is normally broken down by the liver, you have that builds up, the child that takes on a yellowish tinge. So Shulchan Aruch says, where is this? Tino kayorok, where is this? Reish Samach Gimel. Kadin shu yorok, sinin shu lanofu bo domoi, ein ma'al nosoi ad shiyibu bo domoi v'yachsa mareyu kamar shar ketanim. Once the child reverts back to looking like all the normal babies, you do the milo right away. So Rav HaPaiskin, Rav Shlomo Zalman, Tzitz Eliezer, the Avnei Nezer all say, if the child is a little bit yellow, you do Mila right away after his color comes back. That's what it says in the Shulchan Aruch. If the child is extremely high levels of bilirubin, though that means the liver is, you know, something's really off, That could be a chalisha b'chalaguf. You have to wait 7 days, mi'es li'es, from when the situation rectifies itself. Okay, and they say the Shulchan Aruch is talking about when it's just a slightly elevated level of bilirubin. So then you have to wait for the color to return, and then you would do milo. Rabbi Tanna disagreed kind of with the Shulchan Aruch, because Rabbi Tanna's pshat makes no sense. It doesn't fit into the Shulchan Aruch. Rabbi Tanna said b'manashach. He said, first of all, the liver never kicks into start functioning until like this fifth or sixth day, I think he said. So every child, he claims, is a little bit jaundiced. That's part of the physiological development of the child. He says sometimes you can have a pathological problem with the liver. That's pathological jaundice. Something wrong. Tanna said, well, then for sure you have to wait 7 days, mi'es li'es. There is no middle ground. Tanna said, if the child is a little bit yellow because the liver hasn't kicked in yet, but that's normal, so then you do the milo right now, even on a yellow baby. If the child has a problem with his liver, which you can determine based on the doctors can determine with other methods, well, then you have to wait 7 days, mi'es li'es. There is no scenario where you just do it the minute that the child returns to normal color, which is what the Shulchan Aruch describes. Shulchan Aruch says the minute the child returns to normal color, you do milah right away. Rabbi Tanna not only disagreeing with the Paiskim, the contemporary Paiskim, but disagreeing with what the Shulchan Aruch describes. Because Rabbi Tanna claims, L'manavshach, either way, you shouldn't do milah right now, or you should be waiting 7 days, mi'es li'es, because it's a chodesh b'chol haguf. So many Paiskim agree with Rabbi Tanna, not to the degree that you should do milah so much on a yellow baby, but they argue at least once they can see that the liver is kicked in, and the bilirubin is dropping, Roshom HaZalman held like that, the Abnenezer held like that, that once the color is beginning to return to normal, and we see that they wouldn't do milah on an entirely yellow baby where the doctor's just, you know, it hasn't started to come back. But if it's already on its way back, the bilirubin is dropping, they'll do the milah already, even if it's above a certain threshold. Because at that point, we see that the liver has begun to function and they're ready to do milah, even though it hasn't returned completely to normal. Rabbi Bleich has an article in one of his svarim where he quotes from Rabbi Yashiv, Dayan Weiss. He disagrees. He thinks, no, if it says in the Shulchan Aruch, when the color comes back, that's when you should do the milah. So it has to return to a normal bilirubin level. Even if it's just a physiological development of the child, either way, it says in the Shulchan Aruch, when it comes back to the normal level, that's what we should follow. Totally rejecting. I mean, that's a complete rejection of what Rabbi Tanna argued. I don't know, I'm not sympathetic to Rabbi Tanna's argument, not because I know anything about the bilirubin, but because the Shulchan Aruch says over here in Siman Reish, I once had a friend who would try to make a big campaign that we shouldn't do like the Moelim, we should do the Mila on the child, even though it's a little bit yellow, because all the doctors agree that it could be, there's nothing wrong with the baby, it's just the normal development of the baby, and in the hospital they would do a circumcision. But I don't know if there's a reason to rush to do it. The Shulchan Aruch says, "Tzarek lizar ma'oy be'elu advarim sif'al," quoting from the Rambam, "she'ein ma'alim v'lad she'yesh b'chashah shcheili." Even if it's just a chashah shcheili, we don't do milah. The sakanas nefesh is doiches hakol. Sakanas nefesh puts aside everything. She'ev shalolim alachas man ve'ev shalahav shehach zir nefesh achas mi'israel. You can't do, you don't get a do over here with sakanas nefesh. So if you're wrong, it's a big problem. So milah, wait till the next day, you do milah. This could be the Rambam l'shitasa, that the mitzvah of milah is not a status, but an action. So if you push it off one extra day, you don't lose that much. But the Shulchan Aruch says that we shouldn't rush to do things and compromise the sakanas nefashos of the child, even if it's just a chashash sakana. We shouldn't override that. We mentioned, and when we learn pikuach nefesh, the Gemara says in Masechtas Yevamos, if the child has a little eye ache, we push off milah. So Radvaz explained, because milah itself is sakanas nefashos, just the milah. When you add on to it a little eye ache, so now it's like, you know, Shar Tzarachov. We don't want to get involved in shyness. Once we're dealing with someone, Mila itself is Sakonis Nefashos. Once even a little eye ache, a little yellow, I wouldn't, and the Shulchan Aruch says we shouldn't get involved in it. So I don't know, I wasn't sympathetic to that. To the whole issue doesn't really appeal to me, but I hear where he's coming from. In Sif Beis, Siman Reish Samach Gimel Sif Beis, the Shulchan Aruch discusses a woman who her first son died after Mila. Then the second son died after Mila. So then it says in Shulchan Aruch, she has a chazakah, her children dying after Mila, so you shouldn't do Mila on the third son. The Rambam says, you shouldn't do Mila at all, you shouldn't do Mila until the child grows up, and then you do Mila. It doesn't say that in the Gemara. The Gemara has this case. First child dies, second child dies, third child, no Mila. It sounds like no Mila ever. The Rambam says, no, you wait for him to get older and then you do Mila. It's against the Gemara. So Pisrei Tshuva calls him the Noid of Yehuda. He says, if he was strong enough, he wouldn't. He would have rejected this Rambam. Never do Mila. That's what it says in the Gemara. He says, if he would have been able to argue with the Rambam, he would have disagreed with the Rambam. But it says in the Rambam, you wait till the child gets older and then you do Mila. It's a hard Rambam to accept, though, because many understand the Shulchan Aruch is describing hemophilia. It only works in the Rambam, though. It doesn't work in the Shulchan Aruch, because hemophilia is an X chromosome linked. So the Shulchan Aruch says it goes down, it gets transmitted by the mother. A father can't transmit it to his son. A father can transmit it, though, to his daughter. But it can't be a son of a father, because it's linked to the X chromosome. I'm not getting involved in all that. For those of you who know what I'm talking about, you know what I'm talking about. So the Shulchan Aruch says, if it's one son from the mother, a next son from the mother, that worked with hemophilia. But then at the end he says, a father gives his son a Y chromosome. He doesn't give him an X chromosome. The X chromosome he gets from the mother. So hemophilia can happen to transfer from a father to his son. From a father to a daughter, yes, but not from a father to a son. So the Shulchan Aruch doesn't seem to be discussing hemophilia, or just wasn't aware of this. The Rama disagrees and he says, no, it's only by the mother. Which makes sense. That works with hemophilia. But if it's hemophilia, so then the third child, just because he gets older and stronger, is not going to make him ditch the hemophilia. Unless what he means is, we would have found out already at this point, we're not going to make the first wound. It means the kid got cuts and scrapes along the way and he didn't die. So then we can presume Mila also won't trigger that. What about if you have a situation of hemophilia? So do you supposed to do Mila or not? So in the Nishmas Avraham, he quotes from Rabbi Neuwirth that you can take an injection. I think Rabbi Tam mentioned it this year. You can take an injection and that will give you the factor, the blood clotting factor that the person is missing, and the blood will clot for a certain period of time. You can make an injection. The reason why the blood doesn't clot of a hemophilic is because he's missing one of the blood clotting factors. So you can take an injection with that, and blood will clot for a certain period of time. So before the Mila, you could just give the kid the injection, and the blood will clot like normal. So but are you obligated to do that? So Rabbi Neuwirth says, you're not obligated to do that. You're a suffix sakana. I don't have to take an injection in order to perform the mitzvah Mila. But Shlomo Zalman held, no, you do. I think Rabbi Tellner held, they imply like that, that if you can take an injection of the factor 5 or whatever in May, the blood will clot, then you're obligated to do so in order to perform the mitzvah Mila. Rabbi Bleich has an article in one of his farm, I think, discussing lasers. Nowadays they can do Mila with lasers, which would be bloodless surgery, but then you have the whole problem of bloodless Mila to begin with. I'm not sure if the laser makes the blood clot because of the heat of the laser. Maybe that's it. Maybe there is no blood. I don't know. You have to look at the article what the problem is with the lasers. Maybe it's just not a knife, but there is blood. I don't know how the laser works. If it bleeds or it doesn't bleed. The Gemara has a discussion about Noilad Mohu. That's over here, then the next simon over here, or the end of Simon Reish Samach Gimel. About a Noilad Mohu, a child that's born Gemalt, without a Mila. It doesn't really happen nowadays. There are a few people in the Midrashim who were born Noilad Mohu, Yaakov Avinu. For a few people who were born Noilad Mohu, it doesn't really happen anymore. But, you know, in the medical literature, they don't have it. But the Gemara, the Shulchan Aruch, the Midrashim mention it. So the Gemara discusses, what's the status of a Noilad Mohu? Does he require Mila or not? Maybe he was just born without a Mila. That's the implication of it. Or maybe no, says the Gemara, there is a suppressed Arla. I don't know what it means. But the Gemara says, maybe there's an Arla Kvusha, a hidden Arla here somewhere that we have to go looking for to remove. So what's the difference? Well, does it require Hatofas Dabris? If there's no Arla, you don't have to do anything to the kid. If there's a suppressed Arla, then we have to do Hatofas Dabris in order to remove the Arla Kvusha. So that's a suffix in the Gemara. Is Noilad Mohu no Arla, or is it the Arla Kvusha suppressed Arla? Another suffix the Gemara has is if there is Al Hatzah, that there is an Arla Kvusha, is it a Vaday Arla Kvusha or a suffix Arla Kvusha? Is there certainly a suppressed Arla, or perhaps, you know, a fear of a suppressed Arla? What's the difference? Will it be Doicha Shabbos? If there's a suppressed Arla Bishpashu, it could be Doicha Shabbos. If not, a suffix, you cannot be Doicha Shabbos. And Shulchan Aruch over here, Simir Reish Sam and Gimel Siv Dalid, we paskin that you require Satofas Dambris, a Noilad Mohu, and it says later on in Simir Reish Sam of Rav Sif Yud that it is not Doicha Shabbos. So we paskin there is an Arla Kvusha, but it is a suffix Arla Kvusha, not a Vaday Arla Kvusha. The problem is that the Pisrei Tshuva over here, Sifka in Yud, I think it's Reish Sam of Gimel, Sifka in Yud, says, Ayin Tshuvas Mishkan is Yaakov. That's all he says. But the Tshuva, you look it up, the Tshuvas Mishkan is Yaakov, is a famous Tshuva, asks a problem within the Rambam. The Rambam, and that's the basis for the Pesach of the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, Noilad Mohu requires a Tafas Dambris. Suffolk, but it requires a Tafas Dambris. Yet the Rambam also Paskins, a Noilad Mohu is allowed to eat Truma. How can a Noilad Mohu eat Truma? If a Noilad Mohu requires a Tafas Dambris because he has an Arla Kfusha, then he's an Arel, and Arel is not allowed to eat Truma. So Mishkan is Yaakov explains that we require Hatovas Dambris by Noilad Mohu not because of an Arla Kfusha. Yes, it's true that was the initial reason why the Gemara thought you should require Hatovas Dambris, but we abandoned that Svara later on in the Sugya. How do you know? Because the Sugya later brought up, what about a Gersh and his Geyer who was Mohu? A man had Mila when he was a Goy. Now he converts, but he's already Gemal. Does it require Hatovas Dambris or not? He had an Arla. We know where it is. We know where it was. It was removed and ditched. So it's not that there's an Arla Kfusha here. Does he require Tavas Dambris or not? So the Gemara says yes. So Mishkan is Yaakov claims at that point we rejected the Svara. The reason for Tavas Dambris is because of an Arla Kfusha. It's because of a different reason. Why do we require Tavas Dambris at this point? Not because we're looking for an Arla Kfusha. It's because part of the mitzvah of Mila is not only... This is later on explained by Reb Chaim develops this, it's Lepanovich has this, but it's really already found in Mishkan Yaakov, that the Rambam feels you require Hatovas Dambris by an Noilad Mohu, not because it's an Arla Kfusha. He's allowed to eat Truma, he's not an Arel. It's because there's a third part of the mitzvah of Mila. There's Mila, Priya, removing the membrane underneath the Arla, which we'll get to in a few minutes, and Hatovas Dambris. There's a unique part of the mitzvah of Mila of having blood. Never says it anywhere in the Gemara. But that's the understanding that the Achrayim have is what the requirement of Hatovas Dambris is trying to accomplish. It's not looking for an Arla Kfusha anymore. The Rambam holds he's allowed to eat Truma. It's because a part of the mitzvah Mila is to have Hatovas Dambris. That's why the Paiskim were so opposed to the clamp. When the clamp came out, they put out the Sefer HaBris has all the literature about this, and this is a hot issue. When the clamps became, a current issue, everyone signed the list, the Truvas against the clamp. Because there's no blood. And they understood part of the mitzvah of Mila entails that you should have blood as part of the bris. But Moshe went even so, it was as a suffix, I think, in the tshuva, if you require Hatovas Dambris if you use the clamp. Meaning maybe the Mila is no good, so much so that you should require Hatovas Dambris. This new perspective on Hatovas Dambris might also give us a different perspective or a different impression about how you're supposed to go about Hatovas Dambris. What does Hatovas Dambris mean? So Gemara says in Masechtas Shabbos that there was one Amora who tried to do Hatovas Dambris on his child, and he almost made the child into a Krush Shavcha. Well, that implies that's a heavy-duty procedure. That's not just a hypodermic needle. So Meiri writes it means to remove the entire upper layer of skin on top of the Atara. Wow. Or Zarua says, no, it just means might see a little bit of dam. Again, if it's you're looking for a hidden Arla, we understand where the Meiri is coming from. Remove the whole area. If it's because it's part of the mitzvah meal is to have blood, we understand now why the Oriz Arua says it's just a little bit of prick of dam, a hypodermic needle. It also might have to do with where is Hatovas Dambris performed. Is it performed on the top, the tip of the Atara, where the Arla would have been? So if you're looking for a hidden Arla and it will come out with a little prick of dam, so then it should be on top of the Atara. No, maybe it should have been where the Arla was attached to the Gid, which is lower than the Atara. So that's another. The Sefer Bris also has that machlokes. Where is Hatovas Dambris performed? I was once at a Hatovas Dambris a few years ago. I don't remember, maybe Rabbi Ram asked me to be part of a Beis Din Hatovas Dambris by Geiris, but I blocked out the whole thing. I'm trying to remember what took place, but I don't remember. They did Hatovas Dambris, but I don't remember where they did it. But anyway, two opinions where it's supposed to be done. Where the Arla would have been attached to the Gid, in which case it's on the Gid, or on the Atara itself. Where the Arla would have been if it would have been there. Yes?
This would be the same for someone who's a Baal Tshuva and had a hospital bris.
Had no bris, correct, yeah. Or possible bris.
So you require them to have some bris?
We'll get to that right now. We're going to get to that in two seconds. The Shulchan Aruch says one thing we left out back in Simon Reish Samach Beis is the first thing in Reish Samach Beis Sif Aleph is you have to do Mila Eimalin Achatone Tzachama. The Mishnah says in Masechtas Megillah all mitzvahs that are by day you have to do after Anei Tzachama, after the sun rises. L'chachila B'di Yevin can be done from the time of Amud HaShachar when the light from the sun begins to come over the horizon. So the pasuk says by Mila, Uvayoyim Hashmini Yimo B'sar Alasa. It has to be on the eighth day, and it has to be on the day eight and by day. It has to be during the day. So the chathiro should be at Hanetzah Chama, but the Yevid, you could do it at the time of Amr HaShachar. So that's what the Ramah says. But the Yevid, you could do it from Amr HaShachar, the chathiro, you should do it from Hanetzah Chama. Paiskim say you shouldn't do it from Amr HaShachar. You should wait till after Hanetzah Chama. It's not good enough for everyone's running out to work. No, it might be good enough to daven by Amr HaShachar, but Mila, the one day a year, you can wait, for your son. You don't have to run out to work that day. You can wait till after Hanetzah Chama, and anyone who can't make it, that's their problem. How late can you make it? It says by day. Whether you have the whole day? Well, there's a concept called Zriza Magdim and LeMitzvahs. You should do mitzvahs as early as possible. Well, let's say, so we have to do Daven Vasikin. It has to be a Netzach Chama. Zriza Magdim and LeMitzvahs. You have the Daven Vasikin for the mitzvah of Mila. It's a nice idea. Do you have to do that? Not a lot of people will attend your bris if it's at the wrong time of the year. So do we care about that? Or do we say, B'roi Vam? You know, the Indian of doing a mitzvah in a larger population, or we have zrizim. So what do you do when you have a contradiction, a conflict between zrizim and beroi vam? So the Stei Chemed has a long discussion about this. So does the Bir Hetev in Hilchos Rosh Hashanah, because the Gemara says in Masechtas Rosh Hashanah that we blow tkiya shofar. They used to blow tkiya shofar by shachris, but then there was a gzera against blowing shofar because they thought they were going to make a coup. There's Xeris Hamalchus against blowing shofar by Shachris. They thought they were going to make a coup, so they were Mavato Tkiya Shofar by Shachris, and therefore they pushed it off later till Musaf, later on in the day. So it sounds like our default position would have been we would have preferred to do Tkiya Shofar by Shachris. Because Zriza Magdim LeMitzvahs, even though, as we all know, Rabbi Yisrael, if you don't know, you will soon find out, more people are at Shul by Musaf time, whatever reason that is. So Rosh Hashanah too. However important Rosh Hashanah Shachris is, most people, a lot of people, more people there by Musaf. So we should really blow it by Musaf, by Rav Am. Why is our default position to blow by Shachris? So the Be'er Hetev quotes the name of the Radvaz, that you see Zrizin takes precedence over Be'er Vam. There are more people there Musaf, but nonetheless, they used to blow Tkiya Shachar by Shachris. The only reason we blow by Musaf is because there was the Gzeres HaMalchus. The Chacham Tzvi disagrees, and he says, no, the people coming by Musaf is a Davish Loi Ba'al Yolam. Maybe that week there'll be nobody coming by Musaf. It's a suffix. But let's say I know people came, they RSVP, they'll be there. If I can make a 9 o'clock bris, they'll come. If I make a 5:45 bris, they're not coming. I know there'll be more people, so maybe Beroi Vam takes precedence over his reason. So there's a whole discussion with regards to all mitzvahs. So, make a pshara like we do in life. Life is full of pshara. So you make a pshara, Beroi Vam's reason, don't do it too late, don't do it too early. How late is too late, though? Even if you're going to give precedence to Beroi Vam, how late is too late? Is there a too late? So if Sternberg writes in the Shulchan Aruch, the name of the Chazon Ish, past 9 o'clock is too late. You've been Zrizus. At that point is over. On Shabbos, we do it after Tefillah, after Shachris on Shabbos. So, but you're davening pretty early already. You have to do it after Shachris on Shabbos. So there, the Pisrei Tshuva writes over here, some Reishan with base of Kohen Beis. You shouldn't have a big grace of Chazon and you're only Gunim. So much so that Mila goes past the morning, past 12 o'clock, past noon. That's a past Chatzais Hayom, and that's already too late. Because the pasuk says, "Vayashkim Avram baBoker." Akedas Yitzchak. But he got up in the morning. It should be done in the morning. Here, it's not even morning already; it's the afternoon. That's on Shabbos. The Pisrei Tshuva already is. Of course, from the Shus Yaakov is not happy about that. But Sternberg says a line in the sand is 9 o'clock. All right, whatever. Whatever it is. It shouldn't be too late. You shouldn't forget about the whole concept of Zrizus and your efforts to please everybody and make the right time for Mila. Okay, so Mila has to be done during the day. Has to be done on the eighth day. What if you did it early? You did it at night, even on day eight, you did it at night, or you did it early, day six, day five. What's the story? So the Ramah makes a funny distinction. The Ramah says, if you did it by night, you require Hatovas Dambris. If you did it by day, you did it by day, but it was earlier than day 8, 6, 5, 4, you don't need Hatovas Dambris. So Shach says, this makes no sense. He says, if you do a mistaken bris, you do the wrong bris, do you require Hatovas Dambris or not? Should be the same in both cases. If it's before day 8, when day 8 comes, you should do Hatovas Dambris. If it's at night, you should require Hatovas Dambris by day. If no Hatovas Dambris, no Hatovas Dambris. But if yes Hatovas Dambris, what's the difference between day 8 and at night? So the Shach thinks both scenarios require Tavis Dan Bris. The Pischei Tshuva quotes the Mishagas Aryeh, neither requires Tavis Dan Bris. Tavis Dan Bris is part of the mitzvah Mila. Once Mila is over, you did it the wrong way, you don't get a do-over. The R was off, you know. Whether God off the right way or the wrong way, there's no Tavis Dan Bris. Because the R was off, it's over. You missed your opportunity, you did it wrong. But the Ramah's distinction is fodder for the Rosh Yeshivas. Reb Chaim has a pshat in the Ramah, the Stifler has a pshat in the Ramah. Or pshatim in this Ramah, why should there be a difference between day earlier than day 8, no Hatavas Dambris, and not yes Hatavas Dambris? So they explain, it could be because Hatavas Dambris is not Mila. It's its own mitzvah, like we mentioned before, a third wheel, perhaps, if you will. But perhaps it functions on its own. It's part of the mitzvah Mila, but perhaps it has its own rules. That by night is puzzle for Hatavas Dambris, and earlier than day 8 is a rule by Mila, not by Hatavas Dambris. If Hatavas Dambris is its own entity, then we can play around with it, and perhaps the Ramah held that by day, and by day, earlier than day 8, and at night are two different halachas. Shulchan Aruch and Simon, Reish Samach Dalid, Sif Aleph tells us, Hakol Ksherim Limo, once we're on the topic of Hatavas Dambris, Hakol Ksherim Limo, everyone is kosher to do Mila. Not a Nokri, though. Not a non-Jew. Why can a Nokri not do Mila? The Gemara has two reasons why not. Either because the Pasuk says by Avraham Avinu in Parshas Lech Lecha, Himo, Himo, Lachem, that you should certainly do Mila. But it implies a person has to be a Bar Mila himself in order to perform Mila. Or as the Pasuk also says by Avraham Avinu in Parshas Lech Lecha, Va'ata is Brisi Tishmar, and you should keep my Bris. Watch over it. Which implies that you have to be included in the Bris. Included in the covenant of Mila. So either way, the Nakri is not Himo Yimo, he's not a Bar Mila himself, and he's not included in the Bris of Mila, so either way he's excluded from doing Mila. What's the difference between these two reasons? If it's Himo Yimo, because Ata is Bisi Tishmar, so Gemara says the difference is by women. It's counterintuitive what the Gemara says. Gemara says women are included in the Bris, are excluded from the Bris of Mila. I would have said they're included in the Bris. It's a technical exemption. But no. The Gemara says no. They're excluded from the Bris. But Atas Tis Brisi Tishma does not apply to women, the covenant. But they're included in the Maisa Mila. Because women are commanded Mahal Yadamya. Women are as are if they're Gemal. Counterintuitive. But that's what the Gemara says. So the Gemara says it depends on which reason an Nachri is excluded, whether or not women are excluded as well. And Tosfos there has two opinions. Well, what about the women? What about Tzipora, the Gemara asked? Tzipora did Mila. So Gemara says, maybe Tzipora enlisted the help of someone else. He appointed a shliach. Maybe she began it. The Moshe Rabbeinu finished it. Different pshatim, as the Gemara says. But you have no raya necessarily from Tzipora. And the Tosfos has two opinions how we should paskin. It's two opinions in the Gemara. Is a woman kasha for Mila, a pasuk for Mila? And Tosfos has a machlekes about it. The Shulchan Aruch says a woman is kasha for Mila. But im yesh gadol Yisrael gadol she de'alima, who called him the kulam? He comes before everyone. But if not, you could use a woman. The Ramah says yesh armim ishaloi timo v'chei noegin. The meaning is a woman don't do mila. I don't know. Does that mean she's puzzled? Does that not mean she's puzzled? It says he shouldn't do it. What if though you have no choice? There's no man around. You're in a remote place. You know your placement department didn't do you well, and they stoop you somewhere. You know in the Fiji Islands, and you have no. All you have is a woman. You have no male. So the Paiskim discuss, or it's a Sefer Abris discusses, let's say you can fly in a male, but it won't be a Mila Bismana. But a woman will do a Mila Bismana. So is a woman Mila Bismana preferable to a man Mila Shaloi Bismana? So again, the Paiskim discuss all these things. Let's say a person though had a Nachri who did Mila, the Ramah says you require Hatofis Dambris. And again, the Shagas Aryeh pops up. No, Hatavas Dambris, it's over. Fafalin, you did it wrong. You can't fix it now. The Arl is off. You can't fix it by doing Hatavas Dambris. But the Ramah says, as you mentioned, if you had a Nakri who did Mila, you acquire Hatavas Dambris. The Ramah also goes on to say, a Mumar La Relus, who Bechalo Shabbos Befrahesi, a Mumar La Kol Torah Kula, who does Mila, the Mila is no good. Ramaisha writes, he requires Hatavas Dambris. Ramah doesn't say it. It's interesting. Ramosha assumes, the Ramosha says, Amumar la relos, Amumar la chal shabbos for hesi, Amumar dino ka'akum, you would require a toughest dambris. Rabbi Kiva Ego, though, disagrees with the Ramosha. Rabbi Akiva Eger holds a Nakri, yes. A Mumar, even a Mumar, Dino Ka'akum, that's a long Rabbi Akiva Eger over here, claims a Mumar, no, it's Kasha for Mila. Certainly not only not required, that was not risk, Kasha for Mila. An interesting, and some passing like Rabbi Akiva Eger, I think Ravazna has a tshuva in the Shevet HaLevi, require passing like Rabbi Akiva Eger. Next sif over here is what?
Maybe this has the Binyan Sia.
Why?
The Tina Cherishka thing is all about.
Yeah, but here it's even a Mumar La Relus, who does not have the status of the Dina Kakum. Most of the time it'll be an RL himself who's doing it. If he's a Mumar, well, it could be.
Why not? That Jewish doctor. Jewish
yeah,
doctor.
Maybe, yes, maybe not.
We have a lot of Jewish doctors.
Right, and who have Mila, you
say. Mila, but they're Bahal Shabbos.
Right. The Shulchan Aruch says in the next sif, Reishon Adal Sif Beis, B'chol Malin, you can use anything you want that's sharp to do Mila. The Rambam says, and it says over here in the Shulchan Aruch, that the minig is to use a sack and shobarzo. Why? Because it says, Tzipara used a tsar. And the pasuk says by Yeshua Charvos Tzurim, and the Aruch HaShulchan quotes from the Targum Yonasan and Charvos Tzurim that it means Izem al Charifin, a sharp knife. Remendel Kasher in the back of the Torah Shlema, which is a valuable set in its own right. But Remendel Kasher in the Torah Shlema has, I think, a piece about this. He has Simonim in the back. He collects Midrashim and has footnotes, valuable footnotes, and then he has Simonim in the back where he discusses more issues at greater length. So Remendel Kasher there writes, he thinks the minig was always to use a single blade because the Rambam says, why Minigas use a sakin shobarzo, a knife? Why not scissors? Because he thinks that the Rambam he collects a whole group of things. The Rambam did lahitzi midei akaroim. Rambam says there are a few things. The Rambam, like we were kaddish, whatever. A few things. The Rambam he thinks the Rambam's reason of doing it a certain way was in order to dispel the notion that was existent at that time by the karoim. So the pasuk says karvos tsurim. The karoim understood you need scissors, two blades. So in order to dispel that notion, the Rambam said we should use dafka, one blade, like a scalpel. Rabbi Tendler mentioned that you should use a double-headed scalpel. Harvos, because the pasuk says cherev pifiyos biyadam. Two sounds like there's two mouths to it, so two-headed scalpel, but it's a scalpel nonetheless. What is the mitzvah? So that's what you use to do the mila. Then the Shulchan Aruch discusses what is the mitzvah mila. Entail. So the Shulchan Aruch says over here, Reish Sam of Dalet Siv Gimel, and Siv Hey, that the mitzvah mila means to remove the majority of skin that covers the atara. That's the mitzvah mila. The leftover skin, if there is leftover, that's called tzitzin she'ena ma'akvin es hamila. If it's a miut of the skin that's covering a miut of the atara, tzitzin she'ena ma'akvin es hamila. If you leave on roiv of the skin, that's called tzitzin hama'akvin es hamila. Because you left on roiv of the skin. So that's pieces of skin that that prevent you from being yoytz in the mitzvah mila. Let's say you removed roiv of the skin, you removed the tzitzin ma'akvin es hamila, but the tzitzin she'ein ma'akvin es hamila, a little minority of skin left on the atara. So if you haven't finished doing the ma'isa mila, it says in the Shulchan Aruch you should go back and remove the rest. Right? So you're still cutting, so you shouldn't stop there. You should continue cutting and cut off the rest. If it's on Shabbos, let's say you stop doing the Ma'aseh Mila. So if it's on Shabbos, you cannot go back and cut more. Because once the mitzvah Mila is Daicha Shabbos, going back and cutting extra is not Daicha Shabbos. That it says in the Gemara. What it doesn't say in the Gemara, and this is the Machlokes between the Torah and the Rambam, is what about Tzitzin She'ena Ma'akvin Es HaMila during the week? If you're still cutting, you should continue to cut the rest. Let's say you finish cutting. Should you go back and cut the rest off during the week? On Shabbos, you're not allowed to. What about during the week? See, the opinion of the tour was, yeah, go back. It's a Hidur Mitzvah. We don't normally think of Hidur Mitzvah in that way. You know, an Esrog box, you know, it seems like Hidur Mitzvah. We don't really think of this as a Mitzvah Mehuderes, but it is. To fulfill the Mitzvah in the best possible way is a Hidur Mitzvah. So you should go back and cut off the rest of the skin. The Rambam's opinion is during the week, you don't go back. Just like Shabbos, you don't go back and cut off the rest of the skin. Why don't you go back during the week and cut off the rest of the skin? Why not? It's not Chavala Shalai L'Tzarech. It sounds like it's a Hidur Mitzvah. Why not? So Brisker Rav explains, the Pshat in the Rambam is, it's usually brought up in Hilchos Chanukah, but the Brisker Rav explains, it's because the Rambam's opinion is, Hidur Mitzvah only applies, it's not an independent concept, it's to do a mitzvah in a fashion of Mehudar. It only is if it comes in conjunction with the Maisa Mitzvah. If you already yoytze the Mitzvah, you can't now add on icing on top of the cake. You know, you can't eat the cake and the icing separate. The icing has to be eaten with the cake. So if you, the nimshal is, you have to do the ma'isa mitzvah together with the hidor. That's a mitzvah behuderis. But to do a mitzvah, then the hidor independently doesn't make sense. And perhaps the two understood hidor mitzvah is an independent concept. There's the ma'isa mitzvah one thing, and hidor mitzvah is a separate thing. And that's how the Brisker Rav explained to Machlokes in the Rambam and the Tur. We passing like the Tur, that even during the week you should go back and do it. Their ma'ilam will do that. I've seen him come back the next day and correct it. If it wasn't done entirely to his satisfaction, cut off a little bit, it's not nice to the baby, cut off, or to the mother, and cut off a little bit more. But that's what it says in the Torah, yeah.
Could be the Torah held like the Rambam with regards to either mitzvah, but differently with regards to the mitzvah being gemal. So if you're still finishing the mitzvah of being gemal.
Well, it's over. You remove the arba. The rest is just here. There's a lot. There's plenty of room to say other mahalchim here in this. Yes, a lot of people like to disagree with this brisker up. They quote it just to disagree. Pischei Tshuva over here. Subkan Tetzvah makes a pshara. He says if it's in the name of the Shagas Aryeh. He says if it's a strong baby, you should go back. A weak baby, not go back. Interesting distinction. Okay, so you have to remove roiv of the skin that covers the atara. What is the atara? We think we know what the atara is. We should. It's the tip of the aver. That's the atara. That's the opinion of the Rambam. The entire tip of the aver is the atara. The shock over here, Sivkotin Tess, Reish Tam Nadal, Sivkotin Tess, quotes from the Chacham HaSfardi. The Chacham HaSfardi is not a popular figure over here in Hilchos Megillah. It has two big chumras. But the Chacham HaSfardi claims that no, that the atara is not the entire area that's at the tip of the gid. It's the widest part of what we would call the atara, is the widest part of the tip of the gid. That is the atara. If Schefter said it's machlekes, he claims it's machlekes about what type of atara are we talking about. Are we talking about a crown that sits on top of the entire head of the king, or like a wreath, like the Greeks used to wear? It's around just the widest circumference. So there's a big difference, Lamaisa. Do you have to remove roiv of the skin that covers the whole tip? Then you have much more to work with. You can remove, and it's easier. Or is it, no, it's a roiv of the circumference. So if you remove roiv of the skin, but you leave roiv of the circumference, according to the Chacham HaSfardi, you haven't been yet to the mitzvah milah. You have to remove roiv of the skin around the circumference. And why the circumference of the tip of the aver? Then there's a further machlokes that's quoted by the Sefer HaBris, who I said was himself a mayo, about what did the Chacham HaSfardi mean? Did he only mean the circumference, or did he mean to include with that the charitz, which I think Rabbi Tamler called the corona, behind the widest part of the tip? There's an indentation, what the Pesukim call charitz, behind the widest part of the tip. Is that also included in the atara or not? If it is, you have to remove rub of the skin that covers that part of the tip. So that the Sefer HaBris discusses that. So he says, he quotes very strange tshuva, but he quotes the tshuva from the Binyan Tzion, who said that he once saw, I think it's a tshuva to Rav Shimshon Fal Hirsch. Rav Shimshon Fal Hirsch asked the Binyan Tzion, who's the Aruch Lener, he once saw someone in the mikvah, and this part of the atara was not revealed. So he wanted to know, should we pass, do we have to pass that the charitz is included in the sheet of the we're machmir like the Chacham HaSfardi? So you have to assume that that's included in the atar, and you have to move rabbi of that skin or not, because this person he saw in the mikvah was not. So the Binyan Tzion says, we're machmir like the Chacham HaSfardi, and we're machmir for the charitz too. But then he was mako, because of a principle that we have in Hilchos Shechita, that rov ha-metzuyin etzel Shechita mumchen hein. Most of the people who get involved in Shechita know what they're doing. So he said over here also, he said, most of the people who get involved in Milo know what they're doing. You have the right to assume that if the meal was performed by a reputable Moyo, that he knew what he was doing. Four times you get a Gesundheit. That he knew what he was doing. So if you saw a Milo later on, don't start questioning and hacking with the Milo. If you rov ha-metzuyin etzel Milo mumchen hein, you shouldn't now, open up a can of worms. However, you have to be careful with all these chumras over here. Even the Sefer HaBris, who was a Maya, warns against piling on the chumras, because there's another chumra. If you put together with all these things, start to get dangerous. Shulchan Aruch says in Reish Tamuf Daled Siv Vav that even though we don't open up a can of worms, we don't start questioning a milah after it's done, there is a certain halacha called marasai. And a katan chayav mahu, the Shulchan Aruch says, you have a child, Sim Reish Tamuf Daled Siv Vav, katan shibsara racham aduldo, a baby whose skin is soft and he's a fat baby, chubby baby. So sometimes the atara can sink back into the skin, and the skin will come up around the atara. So you say, what's the problem? It's not attached. But if the skin sits there for a long period of time, it can become adhered to the atara. And the problem will be, he looks like he didn't have a milah. So what's the problem? He did, though, have a milah. What's the problem? It's a marasayan. So Ma says, you have to go back. This happens. And what you have to do is tell them, you have to, the Ma will usually tell the parent if he sees it's going to happen, that you have to, you know, put cream over there to make sure that the skin doesn't become adhered to the top of the atar. It can happen, though. So what you have to do a milah again if it happens. If it gets adhered, you have to cut off the skin again. The Rama here says, I think you only have to cut off skin till miut of the atara is revealed. You have to do roiv of the atara. When it comes to a real miut, roiv of the atara. For the Marasayan, it's enough that some of the atara is open. The Taz disagrees, and the Shach disagrees with the Taz. The Maase, I think it's enough with the miut. The Taz thinks you need roiv of the atara. But there's an interesting halach over here with regards to the Marasayan. Shulchan Aruch says you assess the Marasayan, whether or not the whole atara is now covered, at the time that the Aver is Bekishoi, not when the Aver is Rafa, the time that the Aver is Kishoi. So, okay, that's with regards to the Marasayan, which is a Kula, because now the Atara is more revealed at the time that the Aver is Bekishoi than the time that it is at when the Aver is not Bekishoi. What about regular Mila? When do you assess that? Shulchan Aruch never says. Do you do it at the time that the Aver is Bekishoi, which is a Kula, because more of the Atara could be revealed, or you do it at the time the Aver is not Bekishoi? So the Shach, Sifka and Beis, again, quotes from the Chacham Asfardi, that it's only by the Marasayan you do when the time of the Aver is Bekishoi. Regular Mila is the time of the Aver is not Bekishoi. So you need Rav of the Charitz, Rav of the Atar, which is the round circumference, according to Chacham Asfardi. We include, some include the Charitz behind that, and it's the time that the Aver is not Bekishoi, the time that the Aver is Rafa. So say for our, the Shach disagrees, I think. A quote from the Beis Yosef who disagrees. And the Shach himself disagrees. The Chacham Asfardi says, no, all milah is assessed at the time that the Aver is Bekishoi. But the Pischei Tshuva disagrees with the Shach. Pischei Tshuva, Sifkan, Tezayin, Zadish, Pachan, like the Chacham Asfardi. So if you put all the Chacham Asfardis together, it's a Chumrah. And you can remove too much skin if you go too much over here. So the Sefer Abrus says you got to be careful with putting all these Chumras together. So part of the mitzvah milah, the main thrust of the mitzvah milah is to remove the ar that covers the rive of the atara. Then the Shulchan Aruch says in Reish Samach Daled Sif Daled that the second part of the mitzvah milah is to do priya. Underneath the ar ha'arla is a membrane, like a mucus membrane, called the ar ha'priya. So in the time of the Gemara, they would remove the ar ha'arla, then rip the ar ha'priya and pull it back. Nowadays, we have the minig, the Sefer Bris already quotes this, we have the minig of doing Amila Priya Bebas Achas. And he quotes like this a precedent. At one time, this was a controversial issue. But they quote a precedent like this from the time of the Ga'anim, that already they had this practice, that there were Bekiyim who were able to be Mal Upar Bebas Achas. But what about, so the Mila or HaPriya could, in theory, be pulled back. It didn't have to be removed. The Pischei Tshuva over here, Sifkan Yud Gimel, though, quotes from the Chamud Daniel, the Or HaOrla has to be removed. You can't just pull it back, you have to remove it entirely. Rabbi Tanner brought this up by his case of the hypospadias. But I think the doctor, was anybody there by the doctor? I think the doctor disagreed with Rabbi Tanner. The doctor said that Rabbi Tanner understood that they used the arha to turn it back and make a urethra. Because that skin doesn't grow hair, so it's ideal for making a urethra for the child using plastic surgery. But I think the doctor said, oh, you're not removing the Ar-Ha-Arla, you're just peeling it back and now making a urethra. When the urethra comes out in the wrong place, they have to make a new one. They use the Ar-Ha-Arla to peel it back and they don't actually remove it. I think the doctor said they remove it now and it wasn't an issue. Shulchan Aruch says, Mal below Parah, though, let's say you did Mila without Priya, is Kilu lo Mal. It's as if you did nothing. What does that mean, nothing? Not misgarnished? It's like taking two sections of the fourth year and not taking all of them. It's gilu lo nothing. It's garnished. Or it's a half. So the Shulchan Aruch, see, it seems to be my place between the Ramah and the Shulchan Aruch. Reish Samach Vav. I don't know why I gave that much. But Reish Samach Vav, Siv Yudalid. You got to do all the sections there. Reish Samach Vav, Siv Yudalid says, they used to have a minute when they were interested in giving out kibudim, you know, to more than one person. We all have this issue nowadays. We found other ways to solve the problem, though. But they used to give the mila to one person and the priya to someone else. So Shulchan Aruch says you shouldn't do this on Shabbos. During the week, you can give mila to one person, priya to someone else, but on Shabbos, you shouldn't do it. And the Ramah disagrees, and he says you could even do this on Shabbos. What's the machlekes between the Ramah and the Shulchan Aruch? So the Gra has one shot where the Gra says they're arguing about whether Mila on Shabbos is Hutra or Dechuya, a famous Gra. If Mila on Shabbos is Hutra, I can even split it up. I could give the Mila to one person, the Priya to someone else. The Ramah disagrees, and he says, no, the Mila on Shabbos is Hutra. I'm sorry, the Shulchan Aruch calls it Dechuya. So you have to give, you shouldn't split it up on Shabbos. You should give it all to one person. Because you're increasing Malacha the other way. The Ramah holds Mila on Shabbos is Hutra. So you could even give it to two different people. However, the Pesachei Tshuva quotes from the Yam Shel Shlomo, I think, that no, they're arguing about whether Mila without Priya is anything significant, is garnished, or it's something. Shulchan Aruch calls Mila without Priya is Mamish garnished. So you can't give one guy Mila without giving him Priya, give him Mila without Priya. You gave him nothing. He just, all you gave him was Mechabedim with Chilul Shabbos. And now Mechabedim with Chilul Shabbos. It's not kibud. And therefore, but the Ramah holds, no, Mila without Priya is significant. We Mechabed you with half the Mila, and then we Mechabed the other guy with the other half. And that's the story with Mila without Priya. Shulchan Aruch then continues, Mila, Priya, and then you're supposed to do Mitzitza. You're supposed to suck blood from the Makom HaMila. Rabbi Tendler dealt with this issue at length, so we don't have to deal with it that much. But just the main concept was that the Gemara says they used to do mitzitza, in case you didn't get it after all the smoke. The main concept was the Gemara says you have to do mitzitza as an antiseptic. It's a more explicit Gemara. So if it's only an antiseptic, so why do we continue to do it at all? And Rabbi Tendler argued it might be Chilul Shabbos, because you're extracting blood for no reason on an antiseptic. We find such a thing. They used to wash the baby in hot water before the meal and hot water after the meal in the time of the Gemara. We don't do that anymore. Everybody says in Shulchan Aruch we don't do it anymore. Because we have better antiseptics than washing in hot water. So we have better antiseptics than mitzitza. Why do we continue to do mitzitza? I think the Tiferes Yisrael says we should do away with the whole thing. You don't have to do it anymore. It was only an antiseptic. But Avnei Nezer argues that no. Avnei Nezer explains that since washing the baby before and after the meal was never part of the Maisa Hamila, it was a preparation and a postscript. You know, post-surgery. The mitzitza was part of the Maisa Hamila. So since it was part of the Maisa Hamila, even though it was only instituted as an antiseptic, it took on its own significance and became part of the Maisa Hamila. What significance does it take on? This is the official time we have fulfillment of the mitzvah of Hatafas Damris. This is the official time of Hatafas Damris. So really, like we mentioned before, the part of the mitzvah Mila is to have blood. So the Avnei Nezer, now it took on a new significance as part of the Maisa Hamila. Never says, though, in the Gemara, it has to be done bepeh. So the Sefer Abris quotes from many Achrayim, who's a Chassam Sefer, Shlomo Levilna, Chaim, that at times when people were contracting diseases through the saliva, that their opinion was, you could do it with a tube, you don't have to use a peh mamish. The problem is, the government got involved, and the government tried to regulate this for whatever reason. We don't have time to get into the politics of it now, and no one wants the government to be regulating religious practice. I wouldn't say no one. Most people don't want the government to be involved with regulating religious practice. A holy war. But independently of that, mitzitza doesn't have to be done bepeh. Many were of the opinion that it could be done bekli. Someone just told me 2 days ago, he was a mile by Ramesha. Ramesha was right there. He did it with the tube, and Ramesha was watching. It didn't say anything to him. Ramesha also held. Many people held it could be done with the tube. You should be aware, if you want to know the current politics of it, you should be aware of it. It's an issue that's talked about. Just a few final issues that have to do with the process of officiating at a mila. In Siman Reish Samachay, which is probably the only part that's relevant to all of us, but in Siman Reish Samachay, there are three shitas about when do you make the bracha. The father, when should you tell the father to make the bracha of Achnisa Beviso Shavram Avinu? We said ala mila that the male makes before he does the mila. What about the bracha the father makes of Achnisa Beviso Shavram Avinu? So that's over here in some Reish Samechei. There's three opinions. One opinion is before. It's kind of like a bracha, Birchas HaMitzvah. The other opinion is after. It's a Birchas Shavah Vahidah. The Shulchan Aruch quotes the opinion of the Rosh, a pshara, that you should do it in between the Mila and the Priya. Nice pshara. It's before and it's after. We get to make everybody happy. The problem is, first of all, it sounds like nishta hid, nishta her. You accomplish nothing. All right. There's always a problem with compromises.
That's the Rosh in general.
Yeah. But the other problem is, nowadays we do Mila and Priya at the same time. When do you do this? We suppose, says in Shulchan Aruch, to do it in between. When do you do it? So Shechter told me he thinks you should do it afterwards. There's no, right afterward, we obviously passing it's a Bircha Shechter V'Haidah, that's what we really passing, that's what the Rosh means with this compromise, it's really Shechter V'Haidah, we're doing it after the Milah. So, you should do it afterwards. But they quote in the name of Ramayisha that the father should do it quickly, right away. He should rush to do it in order to kind of get the rush. Right after the Moel says Ala Mila, he should do Lachnisa Barisha Shavram Avinu Bizman. In order to copyright a little bit the compromise. The Kriya Shem is then is also done at the time of the Mila. That's we're skipping to the end. That's the Kriya Shem is also done at the time of the Mila because that was when Avram Avinu's name changed. From Avram to Avraham at the time that he did a bris. That's why the Matan Moshe says we have the meaning of doing the Kriya Shem at the time of the bris. So Reitenla mentioned, I had the Shaila myself. Reitenla mentioned that if the child is not well, he's in the NICU. I mentioned we did all of our bris in a little bit late. So what do you do about naming the child? You usually call it baby so-and-so. Or sometimes the nurses will give a name to the child. The problem is that the nurses think if you don't name the baby that you don't care about the baby. It's true. The studies have shown it. Also, studies have shown, psychologically, that the mother has a greater attachment to the baby when it has a name. They just have shown, and the nurses take better care of the babies when the baby has a name. So anyway, I'll tell you my story when my first son was born early. So, and also to daven for the baby. Some say the baby has to have a name. Even though by Miriam he just said Kel Na Rafan Allah, he didn't say the name, but it says in the Svarim that in order to daven for someone, say Meshaberach, you have to have a name. You can say Tinoik Ben so and so, but better if the child has a name. So Ritenla said you can name the baby before the bris. And that's many hold like that. You can name the baby before the bris. When I had my first son was born, so I called up Shechter and I asked him this. We told him the baby was born, but it was in the NICU. I wanted to know if we can name the baby. We should name the baby before. So he told me that the nurses take better care, blah, 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 we should name the baby before. Reverend Shechter also picked up the phone, and she said, what do you name the baby before? No one names the baby, don't name the baby before. So he's yelling, name the baby before. She's saying, don't name the baby before. So he says to her, when they ask you the Shilas, you can say what you want, they ask me the Shilas. So he said, name the baby. Anyway, we were about to name the baby, and then they told us the baby's going to be out in a few weeks, so in a few days, so we were debating it back and forth, and we decided not to do it. The baby's already coming out. So, but backing up a step, there's before the Kriya Shem, there's the Bracha of Sherkidash Yedimi Beten, which a lot of times the rabbi is honored with to do. So what do you do about drinking the wine? You're going to use the wine for the Kriya Shem, which comes after it. So what do you do about drinking the wine? The Torah has three minhagim about this. One minhag is you drink it before the Kriya, right after you make the Bar Piyah Gafen, Asher Kadash Yedimi Beten, then you drink a little bit of the wine. One minhag is you give to the baby to drink. They do that. They give the baby to drink. But the other minig is, and you never drink it. The other minig is you drink it after the Kriya Shem. And the Kriya Shem is not a hefsik in between the Bar Piyah Gafen and Asher Kadash Yedimi Beten. I don't think there is another possibility you could think of, but, another permutation, but all three minhagim. The minig I always thought was the common minig was to wait till after the Kriya Shem, then take the kais back. If you got, like, say, Asher Kadash Yedimi Beten, wait for someone else going to get the Kriya Shem, you take the kais back and then drink afterwards. It's not a hefsik. But nowadays it's become in vogue, and Rabbi Kiva Eger, that was what Rabbi Kiva Eger's minig was to drink right away after Shekadish Yedimi Beten. But Moshe had that minig, so I think now that has become, the common minig. If you do anything else, the Moshe thinks you don't know what you're doing. So everyone now drinks right away. Chef also thinks you should do that, and that's become the standard, is to drink right away after Shekadish Yedimi Beten, then refill the kais, so it shouldn't be a kais pogum, and then you make the Kriya Shem. You don't have to sit there and drink the whole kais, a little bit. Maybe you have to drink Malay Lugma, a whole tumo, have to drink, but either way, take a sip, you want to drink more, come back later, don't sit there now drinking a whole upset, a whole kais of wine.
We had a Shiloh, we had a verse on Sukkot, and we had the verse in the Shul. Yeah. And so we had the woman drink.
So that you could do the bris outside in the...
It's cold, well, the Rebbe Kansas, he said not do it.
So the Ramah says over here, two final points. Ramah says over here, Reish Tamach Sif Yud Beis, if you are invited to a Sudas Bris Mila and you don't come, you're Menudo L'Shamayim. So that's what it says in the Pisrei Tshuva, Sifkan Yud Ches, we have the meaning not to invite people to a Bris. We don't want them to be Menudo L'Shamayim. If you want someone to be Menudo L'Shamayim and you know he won't come, you can invite him to the Bris. But you're not supposed to invite people to a Bris for that reason. One last thing over here is, it says in the Shulchan Aruch, Reish Tamach Vav Sif Ches, that you only do a Mila is Doicha Shabbos. But only a Vaday Mila is Doicha Shabbos. If it's a Suffolk Mila on the eighth day, then it's not Doicha Shabbos. So when do you have a Suffolk Mila, Bizman, on the eighth day? One is if the child is born Bein Hashmashes, in between the Shkia and Tetzah Kachavim, whatever your Shkia or Tetzah Kachavim is, whatever it is, the whole year, that's what it is here too. If it's Benoila Ben Hashmashes, that's a Suffolk Mila. So let's say a child is born Ben Hashmashes Friday, you can't do the Mila on Shabbos, because it's a Suffolk Mila B'Shabbos, Suffolk Mila Friday, you have to push it off to Sunday. Or if it's a Yaitse Daifin, because the Gemara is not sure, the Pasuk says, if the mother is Tamei Oleda, the Pasuk says, the mitzvah of Vayam Hashmini, Yimah B'Sar Allah, so right next to the Pasuk that the woman is Tamei Oleda, and Parchas Tazria. So Gemara learns out that the woman in the Mila is only on the 8th day if the mother is Tamei Oleda, and the Gemara is not sure if a Yaitse Daifin, the mother is Tamei Oleda or not. If it's unusual, the mother Tamei Oleda. So Yaitse Daifin also, the Mila is not done on Shabbos, if it's cesarean section. Some say nowadays IVF also is a Suffolk Mila Bismana. Because the Shlomo Zalman says, he's not sure if the mother is Tamei Oleda. There's a Rabbeinu Chananel and Chagiga, you should know about it. It comes up. Rabbeinu Chananel and Chagiga. You have to be Shlomo Zalman to know about this. Rabbeinu Chananel and Chagiga, that if a mother becomes pregnant in a bathtub, then she's not Tamei Oleda. That's not what the Torah is talking about. It's so abnormal. So the Rabbi Shlomo Zalman claims, so too, mother being pregnant in a bathtub is now IVF. So some say it's so commonplace, it's not abnormal anymore. I don't know if it's so commonplace, it's not abnormal. It's still not the norm. So maybe a woman would not be Tamei Oleda, and therefore the bris would not be Derech HaShabbos. So no one knows about how the mother became pregnant. You could get into a sticky issue. Rabbi Shlomo Zalman held that the bris is not Derech HaShabbos. What about being Derech Yom Tov Sheni? So that's the Shulchan Aruch says over here, Reish Samach Vav Sif Ches, being Derech Yom Tov Sheni, Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Rosh, that if it's a Suffolk Mila Bezman, it's Derech Yom Tov Sheni. And the Shach quotes from the Rambam, it's not Derech Yom Tov Sheni. I'm sorry, it is Derech. Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Rosh, it's not Derech Shabbos, it's not Derech Yom Tov Sheni. The Shach quotes from the Rambam, it is Derech Yom Tov Sheni, but not Yom Tov Sheni of Rosh Hashanah. So Suffolk Mila Bizman is not Derech HaShabbos. Yom Tov Sheni, the Shulchan Aruch says no also, and the Rambam says yes, except Rosh Hashanah, Yom Tov Sheni Rosh Hashanah. Pesachei Tshuva though quotes from the Noda Behuta, the Machlekes wasn't about a Suffolk Mila Bizmana. Machlekes was about a Vaday Mila Shalei Bizmana. Can you do a Mila Shalei Bizmana on Yom Tov Sheni? Not a Yaitse Daifin, not a Noga Ben Hashmashas. A Vaday Mila Shalei Bizmana. That was the Machlekes. Suffolk Mila Bizmana? A Yaitse Daifin, a Ben Hashmashas? That for sure you can do on Yom Tov Sheni. Even on Yom Tov Sheni of Rosh Hashanah. It's a Sveik Sveika. Suffolk Yom Tov, so not. Yom Tov itself is a Sveik of the Yom on Yom Tov Sheni. And the Suffolk Mila Bizmana, Sveik Sveika should be allowed. But Rabbi Aaron Kotler has a tshuva in the Mishnah Rabbi Aaron where he disagrees with this Noda Behuda about Rosh Hashanah. He says, even Rosh Hashanah not. You cannot do a Suffolk Mila Bizmana on Yom Tov Sheni of Rosh Hashanah. So if you realize what just happened, according to Noda Behuda, you could do a Suffolk Mila Bizmana, a Yaitse Daifin and Yom Tov Sheni. Even Yom Tov Sheni of Rosh Hashanah, according to Rabbi Aaron, you cannot do a Suffolk Mila Bizmana on Yom Tov Sheni of Rosh Hashanah. Someone told me this comes up every year. It's a C-section, Bris on Yom Tov Sheni, that we pass on like the Noda Behuda, you can do. So the Yom Tov Sheni Rosh Hashanah, Machlekes Noda Behuda and the Rebbe Aaron Kotler. Okay, Shkoyach Chevra.